happened to do it, so I want to see what you remember.
So we're learning about the life of David, right? And what we started learning is how God prepared David to be the king. But it took about a 15-year journey that he was on after he was anointed. So Saul was the king, and he looked the part, and he...
Chosen by the people.
Yeah, people loved him, but he didn't have God's heart in him. And he was fearful, and so we got the whole Goliath thing out there that everybody's, you know, the king ought to be doing the thing. And so here comes David, who's been anointed, right? And what's the matter, you guys? Why aren't you all fighting this?
Stop. Someone else, not just Carol, this side.
There you go. I told the easy part.
Okay.
What else?
I brought you to Goliath. Come on, you can go from there.
We weren't here for Goliath.
David keeps trying to please Saul.
Yeah.
And he sings for Saul, and he seems pretty naive in that Saul is getting more and more irritated with David. How many times have we decided to try to spear him 3 times or something like that? Some number of times he tried throwing a spear at him. He made him commander of all the forces, and then he demoted him to being a commander of 1,000. He just kept getting pushed down, and David just hung in there, trying to. He looked at Saul as God's anointed, and he wasn't going to do anything. He had many opportunities to kill Saul, and he didn't do it.
So did Saul know David was anointed?
Well, they skipped a few key parts.
Huh?
What does it mean to be anointed? You know,
I don't understand. David wanted to please him, so then why did Saul
need to
please
him? What does it mean to be anointed? Class?
He's set apart.
No. The Holy Spirit fell upon him. Given to Saul. Saul disobeyed the Lord very early on. And then God chose David. And the Spirit came upon David. It left Saul.
Yeah.
Then what happened?
Oh, my grace.
No. What happened? An evil spirit from the Lord tormented Saul. Tried to kill David. Okay? Yes. An evil spirit from the Lord.
So now there was an evil spirit from the Lord on Saul as he was sitting in his house with his spear in his hand, and David was playing the harp with his hand. Saul tried to pin David to the wall with the spear, but slipped away out of Saul's presence, so that he stuck the spear into the wall, and David fled and escaped from
him. So David was, Saul was suffering from the spirit set by the Lord.
Why? Why did
the Lord do that?
Yeah.
Because he's sovereign and he has a plan. So he's going to use Saul to prepare David.
To prepare David. Okay.
David comes in and gets somebody to play music to soothe Saul. They thought David does it, it works. And then he takes David into his home. And David probably thinks at this point in time, he's already been anointed king. I'm going to probably have a nice smooth transition, and then should marry the family, then I will become king. And what happens is, he kills Goliath. The women praise him over Saul. And Saul becomes jealous. And from that point on, the point of Goliath until Saul's death, he tries to take David's life through him into the wall, the spear, through assassins, through having him go and attack Philistines on his own. And none of that fails because God's sovereignty is protecting. And he finally has had enough, and he's just going to come after him. And he'd already offered him his oldest daughter, and took it away, which is another insult to David. And then he gives him his youngest daughter, and he marries Michal, and Michal and him find a way for David to get away from Saul, okay? And he runs to Samuel. But God has taken crutches away from David. This is what he's doing, and we talked about this last week. Crutch is something that you lean on when you're injured. What were the crutches God began to take away from David?
Family.
His family,
his position,
his position,
his freedom,
his freedom,
his power,
his wife,
his wife,
his stuff,
shelter,
his friend Jonathan,
shelter,
yeah, his peace,
food. He had to go hunt for food now. Okay.
His friend
Jonathan, who was best friend. Okay. He is stripping him down, and he's going to teach him to depend upon the Lord, and the Lord only. You see that in the Psalms, don't you? My trust is in the Lord. You alone, Lord, I trust. So he is just going to take them today. And the only way we get through that is through the learning lessons, is through trials, through suffering. He's going to go through somewhere between 11 to 15 years between the time he was anointed to before he actually becomes a king. Literally, we're going to read, Saul's on one side of the mountain, and David is on the other. Okay? Two times he can take Saul's life, and he refuses to, because he believes in a sovereign God who will take Saul's life this time. He is the opposite of Saul. Saul is fearful. David is brave. Saul is not trusting in the Lord. David trusts the Lord. Okay?
Saul is tall, David.
So even when he sought, found out that David was with Samuel, he sent assassins to go kill him. And what does the Lord do? How does he protect David?
They start prophesying.
Well, there was a school of prophets that Samuel was working with. And when they would come, the Spirit would fall upon these men and they would prophesy. Yeah, but twice. And Saul goes himself to kill David. Spirit falls upon him. Mm-hmm. He disrobes, either down to his clothes or takes off his shirt, or completely naked, and he's there lying and he's prophesying. So God has protected David in all these different ways. You know, through his own reason, through his wife, through the Lord himself and prophets and so on. And we see the sovereignty of God working on all things. And that is one of the main themes in the life of David. Now we get to chapter 20, and my reader is going to read the first 11 verses.
Then David fled from Naoth in Ramah and went and said to Jonathan, "What have I done? What is my iniquity? What is my sin before your father that he seeks my life?" So Jonathan said to him, "By no means, you shall not die. Indeed, my father will do nothing, either great or small, without first telling me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so." Then David took an oath again and said, "Your father certainly knows that I have found favor in your eyes, and he has said, 'Do not let Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved.' But truly, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, there is but a step between me and death." So Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you yourself desire, I will do it for you." And David said to Jonathan, "Indeed, tomorrow is a new moon, and I should not fail to sit with the king to eat. But let me go, that I may hide in the field until the third day at evening. If your father misses me at all, then say, 'David earnestly asked permission of me that he might run over to Bethlehem, his city, for there is a yearly sacrifice there for all the family.' If he says thus, 'It is well, your servant will be safe.' But if he is very angry, be sure that evil is determined by him. Therefore, you shall deal kindly with your servant, for you have brought your servant into a covenant of the Lord with you. Nevertheless, if there is iniquity in me, kill me yourself, for why should you bring me to your father?" But Jonathan said, "Far be it from you, for if I knew certainly that evil was determined by my father to come upon you, then would I not tell you?" Then David said to Jonathan, "Who will tell me, or what if your father answers you roughly?" And Jonathan said to David, "Come, let us go out into the field." So both of them went out into the field.
Okay, so what is their plan? I'm not asking for anything deep. What are they told you? What is the plain meaning of the text?
Determine whether Jonathan determined whether or not Saul was angry with David.
do not think too deeply. I always teach you, it's just explaining you the text and getting to it. I want to go deeper, I'll tell you that. That's what their plan is, okay? Now, a little background information. The New Moon Festival.
What?
Can you hear me?
No, I didn't hear what he said.
So. Oh, it's the plan was that Johnson was going to help determine if Saul was really, you know, going to have it out for David or not. So, by the way, when you're answering, it's true because like the window's open and there's cars. I have a hard time hearing two up here, so speak loud. So, that being said, the New Moon Festival was a monthly and yearly event. Okay? That's from Numbers 10:10 and Numbers 28:11 through 15. So, David would have been there, eating at the table, and so on. Now, this is why I want you to go a little deeper now. Put yourself in David's position and explain to me what it's like to live out verse 3. Shan, read aloud again verse 3.
But David bowed again, saying, "Your father knows well that I have found favor in your eyes, and he thinks, 'Do not let Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved.' But truly, as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, there is but a step between me and death."
You are David, and that's your reality. Tell me what he is thinking and feeling. And this is subjective. It says your thoughts, your take on it, but so there's really no right or wrong answer. How would you answer that?
What was the question?
What is David feeling and thinking in light of verse 3?
His days are numbered.
Okay.
Well, no.
And enter into his emotions. Thinking.
Yeah, he's thinking that.
He's wondering why Saul wants to kill him. So.
But he knows that Saul is going to hide that from Jonathan.
Yes.
Because Saul knows Jonathan and David are friends. So, of course, Saul is not going to make it obvious to Jonathan that he wants to kill David.
He wants to kill him. He doesn't want to be sad over it.
Yeah.
Lest he be grieved.
Sure that he can trust Jonathan also.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
Let me go to the last part of verse 3. What would it be like to live that out?
Step between me and death.
Yeah.
That'd be stressful. Yeah.
We don't know, right? I mean, who can relate to that? Have you ever had to live that way?
It's like a movie.
So maybe, let's just all pick on Frank and Shannon. They are married and they get into a fight. And it's never pleasant to be around each other. And if it's not resolved, what do you do? Until it's resolved. Well, you walk on eggshells around each other, right? Who likes doing that?
No one.
No, we all can relate to that if you've been married, right? And that's unpleasant, okay? But, this is something that's far beyond that. I've had to walk on eggshells with a boss who was trying to get me fired. This is even far beyond that. Losing your income and your job is one thing. Losing your life, you're one step away. What else, what toll would that take on you? I mean, think about this.
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting, thank you.
It would dominate your thoughts.
It would dominate your thoughts. You'd be prone to what?
Fear.
Mm-hmm. Fear. Okay?
Well, I think David's trying to figure out what he's done. Like the very first two verses.
Clearly, what else is David feeling or thinking?
He's questioning, yes. What has he done?
He's confused.
How
right?
have I offended your father that is so determined to kill me?
He also doesn't have a good plan. He doesn't have a true insider that can give him a true view of what's going on because his only insider is also someone that he believes the king won't show his true cards to. So.
At this point in time in David's life, what is his view of suffering? I.e., look at verse 1.
That he's looking for is there iniquity. He thinks suffering comes because there's all sin.
Right. Running away.
He thinks suffering has come from doing something.
And he doesn't
it
understand
his fault.
Why.
And no why.
Right.
And that is what we experience, right? The first thing we think of is, and this is what Peter said,
do
you think this is some strange thing happening to you?
Yeah.
You're falling. No, it's not. Yeah, I want it to go away, right? It's the first thing I want.
Mm-hmm.
But second thought is, well, what did I do wrong? And there's times that you've done nothing wrong. It's just the plan of God.
Right.
And then the thinking is, and this is what David doesn't know, and what is the thinking, the next step? I've taught you this in Sunday school.
He embraced it.
You lean into it, which is another way of saying, I think, and I know I am now blessed. Why am I blessed to go through this?
Because God's rebuilding you.
Because then you identify as something.
Blessed are those who
persecuted,
yeah, right?
Persecuted.
And it proves, if you're faithful through it, that you are of the line of the prophets, because what they did to the prophets, they're doing to you. It's an opportunity to prove that you are a believer. And you are now, the next thing you think of is, I'm blessed. I am now getting what? In heaven. Fill in the blank.
Jewels.
Rewards in heaven. So you're becoming richer. And what are you going to do with those rewards, by the way, most likely? Those crowns. Throw back to the feet. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And so David doesn't understand that, but he has a very normal response. This is the Bible's very, it's not sugar-coated. And he is struggling as we struggle. And so you can identify with that. And he's just got, it's just exhausting what he's going through. And oftentimes, God doesn't do this to David when he's older. Why?
Because he's young.
He has the energy to do it. He works with you when you're younger, and he forms your character, and then, you know, there are some consequences.
It builds endurance.
Yeah, it builds endurance. And I only have, I mean, I got to go to bed earlier. You know what I mean?
It's true.
I get tired quicker.
Are you ever disappointed that you're tired? Like,
you've
been planning to watch this movie, and you're all excited, you sit down, and you're like, oh, I'm tired, it's 9:30, now I'm gone.
I don't start, I turn over to that, I know my clock. So let me tell you how pathetic I am. Okay. But 2 months ago, I built up endurance and was hiking up and down the pike. And I got it to where, like, when I was younger, it was always my heart had to catch up to my legs. Now it's the opposite. It's my legs catching up to my heart. So I'm hiking up there, and I hike up there on a Monday, knowing that I could walk normally on a Friday or Saturday. So I'm going to take me that thing, right? And it wasn't the fact that it wasn't the cardio workout, it was the pounding on the legs. So when I, about 2 months ago, slipped coming, so running, I started thinking to myself, okay, my legs are strong now, this is becoming easier, I can push myself. So as I'm going down, cautiously, I slip and twist my knee. And two thoughts. Can I get down? Fine, to the bottom, which I was able to. The second thought was, I'm going to start all over again. So, I had a different plan, and yesterday I only went halfway up and halfway down. And I totally got a cardio workout, felt a little bit of my calves, but the last 3 or 4 minutes, I felt a little bit in the legs as I was going down because of the pounding, because of the speed. Felt a little bit in the legs, was fine, and this morning, a little stiff. And I started to feel a little bit, and I'm like, this is pathetic. It was like maybe 15 minutes up, you know what I mean? Maybe 10 minutes down. I'm like, it sucks getting old. And I thought you and your calf, Don, like you keep your calf and your running, it just like, just sets you back.
I played volleyball last summer, 38. Next day at work, my arms are throbbing. I'm like, I just hit the ball like 4 times. Like, yeah.
So you're younger, and God works and develops your character, and those are some of the things that David is going through, and it's been awful. But he's younger, and he's got energy, and God is teaching him all these hard lessons. Okay? Because when he goes through difficult times when he's older, he has the endurance muscles built up, and he can weather the storm without exerting as much energy.
Amen.
I say verse 12 through 17, the covenant between David and Jonathan.
Verse 12, then Jonathan said to David, the Lord God of Israel is witness. When I have sounded out my father sometime tomorrow or the third day, and indeed there is good for David, and I do not send it to you and tell you, may the Lord do so and much more to Jonathan. But if it pleases my father to do you evil, then I will report it to you and send you away that you may go in safety. And the Lord be with you as he's been with my father. and you shall not only show me the kindness of the Lord while I still live, that I may not die, but you shall not cut off your kindness from my house forever. No, not when the Lord has cut off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, let the Lord require it at the hand of David's enemies. Now Jonathan again caused David to vow because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul.
So what is the covenant they made?
Jonathan will let him know how Saul feels about him, mm-hmm. and in exchange, David will cut off his household when he becomes king. He'll kill him with all his enemies.
That is a big request, because why?
Because he's supposed to kill off all the other living
right.
children of
yes.
Saul.
Former kings, yes.
That would be tradition.
David, his last dying breath, said Solomon to do what? River. Assassinate these people. Mm-hmm. They're a friend to your line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know. And it's like you said, it's standard procedure. So this shows a unique loving friendship between two men. It's godly. Okay. And it's just a direct contrast to the relationship David has with Saul, and even Jonathan has with Saul. Okay? You have one that's a relationship of fear, one of just mutual, respectful love. So they can, you can ask for something that is unheard of, really.
Well, they're both during their life.
Yeah.
You know, when yeah. Jonathan fears his life in the future when David becomes king, David's fearing his life right now.
I also feel that maybe Jonathan, Solomon's king, a lot of kids, a lot of concubines, a lot of prostitutes, or whatever. But I don't know if I'm misreading this, but Jonathan is risking his own life by requesting what the king's opinion is, David. You know, and I think he's risking and sacrificing himself to show David, like, hey, this is what's going on.
And I said before, to his point, that what else is David learning apart from suffering? What else is he learning?
Love.
Politics.
Oh, how to play kingly politics. And so he's learning how to resolve issues using leveraging relationships. He leveraged his relationship with Michael. Okay, he's leveraged his relationship, sort of, he's learning to do that through Jonathan. Because later on, he's going to want to take the direct approach and completely kill Abigail's husband, or Nabal. He's like the very direct David. You know, no negotiation, no politics, I'm just going to end you because you offended me. And Abigail quietly teaches him another lesson about race and mercy and politics. This is how you handle these situations. Okay? David will learn how to deal with those things. Okay? And this is why we have to learn those things. Let's talk about the arrows, verses 18 to 23.
Then Jonathan said to David, tomorrow is the new moon, and you will be missed because your seat will be empty. And when you have stayed 3 days, go down quickly and come to the place where you hid on the day of the deed, and remain by the stone Ezel. Then I will shoot 3 arrows to the side, as though I shot at a target. And there I will send a lad, saying, go find the arrows. If I expressly say to the lad, look, the arrows are on this side of you, get them and come, then, as the Lord lives, there is safety for you and no harm. But if I say thus to the young man, look, the arrows are beyond you, go your way, for the Lord has sent you away. And as for the matter which you and I have spoken of, indeed, the Lord be between you and me forever.
Kind of a simple plan, isn't it?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's not confusing. Something that they could obviously easily work out. And again, but who comes up with the plan?
Yeah.
Jonathan.
Jonathan. Okay. Jonathan is more fit to be king than his father Saul. If Saul had obeyed the Lord, I think the kingdom would have been given over, obviously, to Jonathan, who proved to be, as we will learn, in fact, I don't think anything negative was said about Jonathan in 1 Samuel. Okay. Now, let's talk about the tests, verses 24 through 29.
Then David hid in the field, and when the new moon had come, the king sat down to eat the feast. Now the king sat on his seat, as at other times, on a seat by the wall. And Jonathan arose, and Abner sat by Saul's side, but David's place was empty. Nevertheless, Saul did not say anything that day, for he thought, something has happened to him. He is unclean. Surely he is unclean. And it happened the next day, the second day of the month, that David's place was empty. And Saul said to Jonathan, his son, why has the son of Jesse not come to eat either yesterday or today? So Jonathan answered Saul, David earnestly asked permission of me to go to Bethlehem. And he said, please let me go, for our family has a sacrifice in the city, and my brother has commanded me to be there. And now, if I have found favor in your eyes, please let me get away to see my brothers. Therefore, he has not come to the king's table.
Okay. The test. What's the test?
Jonathan starts out my line.
Oh.
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather have them.
What is the test?
Did it stand out to you as you read that?
Bethlehem, actually, to me.
Bethlehem? What about Bethlehem?
Well, it's just it's the city of David, and that's just why it's kind of struck me.
Anything else came up to you that?
I'm going there to sacrifice.
Jonathan's waiting.
Jonathan's waiting.
He's waiting a day for an answer, and then he gets the answer the next day.
Anything else?
I thought it was unusual. He didn't call David David, he called him the son of Jesse.
We'll get there in a minute.
Okay.
But what stands out to me is this. What has happened prior to this? What did we just read about that Saul tried to do to David? I'm not talking about pinning him against the wall. What did he just do? I.e., that Michael helped him escape. Since assassins, and he tried to take his life, and so he expects him to be where?
At dinner.
You gotta catch that?
Yeah.
Bizarre.
Like, what's going on here, dude?
He's psycho.
Thank you, Marie. So, just like, where's this guy's mind? He could just kill him right there if he wanted to.
Yeah. The thing that stood out to me was that he asked Jonathan
if he could go. Well, so why did he ask Jonathan?
Yeah.
I mean, well, you know why.
Because he's afraid of Saul.
No. Why did Saul ask Jonathan?
It's your best friend.
No, it's
friend.
David asked Jonathan if he could go.
Yeah. When he calls him the son of Jesse, why the son of Jesse? No longer David.
Sounds kind of disrespectful in ways. Sort of making him a non-person.
A child
again.
Who's
he related to now?
Jesse.
Saul.
He's
married to Saul's daughter.
Right. And so he's using that to he calling him in disdain, the son of Jesse.
Rather than
he's now his son by marriage. Okay. Obviously, what should have Saul done as a leader? The king, who was supposed to write down the copy of scroll of the law, meditate on it, memorize it, as much as he can, live it out. What should he have done? Reconcile first. Right? With David, and then offer the sacrifices and so on, and everything at the new investment. He doesn't do that. He is clearly gone. Okay? No one's almost there. Really. Right? So let's talk about Saul's true colors, verses 30 through 34.
Then Saul's anger was aroused against Jonathan, and he said to him, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman.
He said it to my children.
Your mother's.
You son of a perverse, rebellious woman.
Do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, you shall not be established nor your kingdom. Now therefore, send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die. And Jonathan answered Saul, his father, and said to him, why should he be killed? What has he done?
Finally.
Then Saul cast a spear at him to kill him, by which Jonathan knew that it was determined by his father to kill David. So Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger and ate no food the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David, because his father had treated him shamefully.
Okay, Saul's true color.
Finally asked.
How is his true color revealed? By the way, this is what Saul to do this. Michael knew this. Jonathan knew it. Was just confirming it. Who else probably knew of Saul's true intentions?
Michael.
Or he said Michael. What?
Michael probably
David, but he wouldn't admit it.
David.
David.
And Abner probably knew. Well. He was there with him and so on. And you'll see he's a pretty true guy. But beyond that, maybe some servants, as obviously.
I would say pretty much anybody in the king's household.
Okay.
I think Saul must have a spear on him at all times because he seems to be throwing it at people a lot.
Why is he this way? Because we'll talk about this on Sunday, by the way. But you know, as I've been through this before, he's got full of anger, right?
Yeah. Right. Wow. From the fear. Started from the fear. And the spirit has marked him.
My first.
What else? Why?
He has a desire for his kingdom to perpetuate.
He's jealous.
And his family to perpetuate and not be able to take place.
He's threatened.
That the Lord has given.
You're writing, so I ask you to go a little deeper. Why is he full of anger?
Well, my Bible says as long as the son of Jesse is alive, you'll never be king. And go and get him so I can kill him. But why should he even put the death, Jonathan asked. What has he done? Then Saul hurled a spear at Jonathan, intending to kill him. So I think that Saul's trying to protect his bloodline, and he is
furious. Sure, he's trying to do that, but my question is, beyond that, before that, why is he full of anger?
Because the Holy Spirit's no longer upon him.
Okay, but there's a reason why.
And he's sinned.
Because I've been over this before.
With the Lord.
Say it, Erica.
He's offended.
Mm.
Why is he?
What happens when you get offended?
The bait of Satan.
There you go.
God has taken the kingdom away from him and given it to David. So
I will send you the sermon, Gail. It's called the Angry Birds.
Okay, because I don't know that one.
Okay, yeah. What it is that there's a thing called the trap of offense. And you want to explain it, Shannon?
No.
How to deal with conflict.
Yes.
Whenever you get offended, and people in the end times are going to be offended because of the intense persecution that's coming. I'll talk about this on Sunday. The Greek word for offend, remember this? Scandalon. It's the word that is used, you're scandalized. It's the word that's used for a trap. And what Satan does, one of his tools, is he gets you in his trap through offense. So in other words, an insult. Some sort of circumstance or some sort of action that gets you offended. Someone cuts you off at the intersection. Hit the horn and you get angry. If you don't deal with that anger, the scriptures say very quickly, you let the sun go down on that anger, what happens? Anger gets a foothold. You are now in the trap of offense.
Right.
Okay? And then the text says, in 2 Timothy 2:26, you begin to do the will of Satan. The anger causes you, opens you up to other things, such as fear and other things, and you start to lose your ability to reason and think clearly. And this is exactly what's happened to him here. But I want to take you back, I don't think I asked the question properly, where did it all begin? He was offended. Okay? And then it manifests itself all these different ways. And how did it manifest itself? Well, no, look at the text here, verses 3-4. How did it manifest itself in this context? Totally unreasonable. What's he trying to do?
Tried to kill his own son.
Who is what?
The
rightful heir.
Right.
And what else does he say about him?
He called him his name.
What does he say about him? Look at it. You son of a perverse, rebellious woman. What is he implying there?
Your mother was a whore. That's what it said.
Well,
yes, and he's implying then that he's a bastard.
Oh, yeah.
That he is potentially not
his son.
His son.
Okay,
thus threatening, he won't get the kingdom. Exactly. Then, so he's born in the confusion of his mother, not Saul's fault, his mother. No, maybe not be the rightful heir to the throne. But look what anger can do to this person. He's now trying to kill his own son. And he's doing it in front of who?
Everybody.
The whole entire feast.
People are there having the feast. So Abner and everyone else is there. And they, if they had any doubt now, they don't know. What else does he do? He tries to spear and pin his son to the wall. He is out of
his mind. He's out of his
mind. Yeah. That would not be a dinner party. I want to sit there. That'd be so awkward.
About walking out.
You know, you just brought the pie. You know, you're just sitting there, and then all of a sudden the father's trying to kill his son. You're like, where's the exit?
And this is not intense persecution. This is not something that is really offensive, right? It was a little bit of a trick, but it's a little bit of a question just to test. And this little small test brought out what? Unresolved anger. Mm. Okay? An anger that is underground, it goes in the heart, it's called what?
Bitterness.
Yeah. So Saul's already bitter, and bitterness, we get the Greek word pikria, it means poison. You poison your heart. He's poisoned towards David, he cannot think reasonably. Okay? You open yourself to demonic, obviously, activity in your life, the devil gives a couple, speaking of 26, 27. Okay, and he says David must surely die. He's obviously jealous of David, which we already knew. Okay, now reason comes back in through Jonathan. What has he done? Okay, and he can't handle reason, and so he throws a spear at him. That's what we're seeing in politics, by the way. Generally speaking, the right tries to use politics or reason to say you can't groom these children to do these things. Left says we can do what we want. You're a racist, you're homophobic, this and that. They don't want to argue back and forth, so they go to name calling. And the people on the right do the same to the left. Anyways. And David, or Jonathan's had enough. And he leaves in fierce anger, embarrassed, all of that. And he's grieved. Okay? Jonathan's able to quickly move outside of himself and feel grief for who?
David.
Let's finish up here. Verses 35 through 42.
And so it was in the morning that Jonathan went out into the field at the time appointed with David, and a little lad was with him. And then he said to his lad, "Now run, find the arrows which I shoot." As the lad ran, he shot an arrow beyond him. When the lad had come to the place where the arrow was which Jonathan had shot, Jonathan cried out after the lad and said, "Is not the arrow beyond you?" And Jonathan cried out after the lad, "Make haste, hurry, do not delay." So Jonathan's lad gathered up the arrows and came back to his master. But the lad did not know anything. Only Jonathan and David knew of the matter. Then Jonathan gave his weapons to his lad and said, "Go carry them to the city." As soon as the lad had gone, David arose from a place toward the south, fell on his face to the ground, and bowed down three times. And they kissed one another, and they wept together, but David more so. Then Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, since we have both sworn in the name of the Lord, saying, 'May the Lord be between you and me, and between your descendants and my descendants forever.'" So he arose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city.
Can I ask something? So David bowed down three times. Why did he do that, considering there's the religion that does do that?
Yeah, well, that's great, because I was looking at the same thing, Gail, and I looked at my notes here, and it says that he bowed three times. David's bowing down more than once acknowledged Jonathan as the prince.
Mm. Oh.
And expressed humble affection for him. Mm. Okay. Humility, he's showing his love towards him, and still respecting and honoring him, because he still was a prince at that time, even though he was never going to be in the long term. Okay. We're seeing great humility by David. And he's demonstrating this humility and love. Mm-hmm. Again, in what circumstance?
Extreme stress.
He's just lost who now?
His best friend.
His best friend. Mm-hmm. So who's he lost? His family. He can't go to his family because they would be targeted. He has no shelter. He's got no food. He's got to hunt for his food and make his way. That's not a big deal. But he's lost his wife now, okay? And he now has lost his position, and now he's lost his best friend. All of that is building up in him. What do you think David would be feeling? I know what I would be feeling. What do you think he'd be feeling?
Despair.
Despair. He's going to be crushed, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. And I remember when I go through difficult times as a pastor and so on, which you do as God prepares you, I can't remember who wrote it. Maybe it was A.W. Tozer, but he said something along the lines of, God never uses anybody to a great effect until he first hurts them personally. And that's what he did to Joseph, and this is what he's doing to David. God is hurting himself. He is causing these things. Okay? He is hurting him personally. He is crushing him to get him down to where he can then be pliable, a piece of clay that he can form. And David allows him to do that. And he wanted to do it with Saul. Saul wouldn't do it. And then David, he will build him up over time, and David will become who? God's plan.
The bloodline of Jesus.
The bloodline of Jesus. And he will be referred to it as man after God's own heart. Come through the line of David. And Jerusalem will excel under him and only be second into Solomon. Really, David built it all. Solomon had been greater even for a while. It will reach its apex. But it really was built upon David. And how did God use that person?
Yeah,
through Solomon. Totally. So this is why I say, lead into conflict, trials, tribulations, okay? Learn from them. Let God form. Let the pain, whatever it is, by choice, soften you. Don't let it harden you, okay? This is the last time in my notes I've written here that they meet. Jonathan and David. Okay?
Really?
Look where Jonathan goes. Don't miss it, verse 42. It breaks my heart when I read this, because it's an identify with David. Jonathan goes back where?
He went back where?
What does he have there?
Nothing, really.
No, what does Jonathan have there?
His kingdom.
Oh, he's got his father. And
he's got servants.
Servants as well.
Food, whenever he wants it. Shelter from the cold, shade.
But isn't his father still going to, Jonathan's father still angry at him?
No, he's so insane. He goes right back to him. He's got protection from the elements, from the lion, the bear, from thieves.
He's got comfort.
He's got comfort. He's got all of that. And where's David going?
He's going to the
wilderness.
Yeah, no, he's going out there with nothing.
It's like the rich man and the poor man.
So he's got to not only watch out for people trying to take his life, he's got to now protect himself from the wildlife.
Yeah, they don't
care. Okay, he's got to find food, make a fire, find shelter, all of that. He's going to basically go and live in a cave.
So basically, this is the story of when Jesus was approached by the rich man, and he said, give up everything and follow me.
To an extent, yeah, you could say that analogy. But the point is that, guess what? God does his best work in caves. Who else did he form in a cave?
Jonah.
Elisha was in a cave.
Jonah.
Okay. Did his work Jonah in the belly of a whale. All right. What else did he do in a cave? Well, he raised his son from the dead in a cave. He raised who else from a cave? Get the idea? Lazarus. God does his best work in a cave. You're alone. You got nothing else. Okay. And he is working there in you to form you. Mm-hmm. But we avoid the cave at all costs, don't we?
Oh boy.
We have to be forced to go there. Jeremiah
spiders and snakes.
Exactly.
And bears. Yeah.
Okay. Solomon had all those wives. They were bickering with them. Remember that? It'd be awful. What was it? Yeah, it's like he said, but started living in a corner rooftop with a chorus of white. How many wives are
crying? A cantankerous woman.
Mm-hmm. Something like that? What was he thinking?
Yeah.
It wasn't.
No, I don't understand.
You know, when we first got married, we never argued until we got married. We had a long relationship. But after all those years and everything, I can't imagine loving anybody more and thinking how hard that someone that I care. And she was the same way. It's like, you go through it all, you get through it, it's like, this love is so deep and real and satisfying. It's beyond anything I could ever imagine. But you gotta get through it, right?
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question about marriage?
Yeah.
How long have you been married?
Oh, you put me in the spot, didn't you?
29 years.
So,
in that 29 years.
I know it was 29 years.
Good thing you just said a nice compliment for
yeah. In the 29 years, would in your arguments for both of you
same
guys,
one, by
you guys ever like just say, you know what? True? I don't agree with you, but I love you enough, whatever.
Agree to disagree?
Like, is there a moment where you just like, I strongly don't like this, but I'm gonna do it for you on both sides? Do you guys ever go through that a lot, or?
You're asking if I have strong opinions?
I've seen, like, how...
What do you say?
You're asking if I have strong opinions, she said.
Like I'm just trying to figure out...
If you're married to me, she has to be.
You marriage mean, like, authority type thing, you know? Because I'm not married, so I'm fascinated by it.
No, with us, it's never the big things. Those, for some people, they still, for us, it's easy. They always... We never stumble with that. It's easy to small things in life. Like, we haven't argued about... You know, do you squeeze the toothpaste from the bottom or the middle? Nothing like that. But it's still small things like that. I know couples that that's an issue for them. Okay, it's those small things. You're tired and so on. It's all things like, I want it dark and quiet at night to go to bed. She wants to unwind with light through the TV and sound. So there's a compromise there. Okay?
Yes,
and so
I understand.
The compromise is she rubs my back while she does it. And that puts her to sleep quicker.
I can't hear the TV.
She gives you a face mask.
I am a morning person with energy. She takes forever to wake up. She's got energy at night. I am done at 9:30. Okay, so we just work all those things out. Okay? And so I felt like, and she felt like the same way after 2 years of marriage. Who is this person, Mary? I don't know this person at all. But, you know, you make a commitment, you stick through it, and you learn to love. And it is a far more satisfying love. You know, then it's, you have to get there.
Than having a
that's
thousand
why
lives.
You, people that are married are more satisfied in their lives, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Okay? Which is why divorce is so ugly. It just tears it apart. I can't imagine if she were to pass away or pass away, like going through marriage again to get to this point. You're like, oh my gosh.
No.
I don't think you're going to do it. Don't be just be single. Yeah.
I'm not doing it.
Mm-mm.
So, yeah. Does anyone else want to add to that?
Nope.
I'm getting a flat belt.
I'll drive it home
past. All the things I thought were important.
Well, where did Solomon, where all those wives live? I mean, if they lived together, no wonder they were cantankerous.
They have to have their own house.
Well, right. There's thousands, though.
That's
I mean,
right. You get a lot of money. That's where you
have. You know, no wonder they were cantankerous. Can you imagine? I can't even comprehend.
We also
I had to live with other women.
Stuff like that.
Right.
Not
right.
Did the wives have to stay loyal?
Man.
What?
Did the wives have to stay loyal?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure they made sure.
So. Okay.
Wives and concubines.
Lord dog.
Yeah. They were to let his heart astray. So he gathers his mind finally and writes what? Song of Solomon?
It's
and
even David had
all the wives. Right? That's what it just goes down to at the very end. This life sucks.
Yes.
This is most hell on earth right now for a believer. So get the most out of it. Suck every joint you can out of this life. It's only going to get better. And enjoy your work. Obey God. You know, fear God. Keep His commandments. Because in the end, everyone's going to have to give an account of everything in your life, whether it's evil or good, and whether it's hidden or in the light. That's the summary. And so this is what you got to get out of life. So, I agree with Robin Williams. Carpe diem. Seize the day. Right? Seize the day. All
right? Right. Live.
Right, Don, we'll close this in prayer.
Just live.
Lord Jesus, we thank you for our study tonight. We thank you for what you're teaching us.
I'll say it right about
that. Lord Jesus, we do thank you for our spouses. We thank you for marriage. You give us, you use our marriages as a picture of you and the church. Lord,